My name's Greg. I'm an addict. They all going round. Oh, all right. I'm real glad to be here to help you celebrate your anniversary. And I'm tickled to death that we have so many new members. Because I very strongly believe that the newcomer is the lifeblood of this institution. You know, the lifeblood of this thing we call Narcotics Anonymous. The lifeblood of the society. Whatever you want to call it. For those of you who are new, you can probably discount about 90% of what you learn. I believe that recovery over a period of time is a process of simplification. We learn a lot of stuff about recovery. You'll come in here and you'll do worksheets. You'll read books. You'll talk to this person, you'll talk to that person, you'll get sponsors. If you can stick with the basics, you have a chance. It's real easy to get lost in all the gimmicks. We have a brand new set of wonderful step writing guides. You can work them diligently and they won't help you stay clean. We have a basic text. You can read it every day. And won't help you stay clean. We have a book called It Works How and Why. It gives you lots of information about the steps and the traditions. You can learn it perfect and it won't help you stay clean. It's what you do with that information. It's the way you take that information from all sources and apply it to your daily living and use it to find this thing called recovery. And recovery is a very precious gift. This is liable to be an interesting talk tonight. Within the last couple of months, I found out I have cancer of the liver. And I don't feel real good. But you see, I'm an NA member. And the day I found out I had cancer of the liver, I called my sponsor and went to a meeting. That's what NA members do. That's part of how this program works. We don't isolate. We don't hide. We don't disappear into the woodwork when things get tough. We reach out to the fellowship. We reach out to our sponsor, we reach out to our meetings, we reach out to those around us that we've come to learn to love and depend on. That's a big part about how this works. This is a place where we take turns saving each other's lives. And, you know, the people who come after you, that you meet in recovery, treat them real well. Because you never know when your life's going to depend on them. And you'll meet people that come after you. Even though there were, seemed like a whole bunch of brand new people here, stay clean. Hang around, give this thing a chance, keep the faith. There's something very special happening here. You know, some of you who introduced themselves as being new have probably been here before. Some of you probably have never been here before. Give yourself a break. You know, try this way of living. What have you got to lose? If you're like me, you don't have much to lose. If you're like me, you didn't get here because things are going good in your life. Those of you who are here for your first meetings, you know, I know where you live. It's called hell. Because that's where NA is. Go to hell and turn left. That's NA. You're not here because you're good at holding down a job. You're not here because you're good at staying out of trouble. You're not here because you have successful relationships. You're not here because you're the candidate for poster child of mental health. You're here for the same reason that I'm here. You're here because you're none of those things. You're here because you are in a trap that you can't get out of by yourself. And despite all the things you've tried, you're still in that trap. And our literature says, in desperation, we sought help from each other in narcotics and alcoholics. In desperation, we sought help from each other in narcotics and alcoholics. And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense that we can get together a bunch of losers and anybody would stay clean. But we do. You know, I've seen NA grow from 20 meetings to 40,000 meetings. I don't even know how many there are now. That's a guess. Maybe more than that. I've seen NA meetings grow from perhaps 150 people, 200 people attending, and maybe a quarter of that many involved. To look around the room. Now, there's many people here tonight as were in NA when I got clean. And here we're Winston-Salem, North Carolina, of all places. The birthday of a group. All together. You know what? There's another meeting in Bombay, isn't there? And there's one in Denmark. I had the opportunity to speak not too long ago in Denmark. There are 900 NA members from Denmark there. 900 members from Denmark. No, I didn't know when we had one from Arizona, or one from Carolina, or one from New Jersey. You know, there were times when there weren't any anywhere. We got people staying clean, living this way of life all over the country. And there's power here. There are miracles here. There's magic here, if you will. But it isn't going to work unless you can let go and let it work. One of the things I've learned over the last 28 years is there is no substitute for surrender. If you want this thing to work, you're going to have to give up. You're going to have to give up being a dope fiend. You're going to have to give up, you know, being hip, slick, and cool. You're going to have to give up standing on the corner. You're going to have to give up all those things that sometimes seem so attractive when you're not hurting too bad. And reach out for help. First of all, to NA members, and secondly, to a loving God. There is no substitute for surrender. There is no therapist that you can go to that's going to make everything okay. There is no church you can go to that's going to fix your addiction. There is no book with all the magic answers in it. There is no medicine that'll take care of your addiction. When I say my name's Greg and I'm an addict, it means three things to me, very simply. Number one, when I put drugs in my body, I lose the ability to control how they react in my body. I lose the ability to predict where they're going to take me. Number two, I have a tendency to get strung out on anything. I'll take wonderful things and make them self-destructive. You know, it's Reading. I got a book. I didn't read it much on the way down because I wasn't feeling all that well. I was catnapping in a car most of the way. I love to read. I didn't read before I got clean. But I've learned it's a great escape. But you know what? If I pick up a book and get into it, I might have to finish it before I set it down. Now, I might be able to set it down in the meantime, but I have no way to determine that. And I'll get strung out on all kinds of weird stuff. And thirdly, when I say I'm an addict, it means that I carry this spiritual illness that separates me from you. Separates me from every other human being. That separates me from God. That separates me from life and reality. And that's difficult. Because, you know, we know what it's like to be alone. One of the things I remember before coming to NA was the loneliness of addiction. The loneliness. Even when you're in a room full of people. And some of you sitting here tonight in a room full of people are about as lonely as you can stand. Because nobody knows you. Because you haven't let anybody in. Because you're afraid. Because of all these things. You came around the program, and I did pretty much what we do. I mean, there aren't a lot of different ways. We think we got some unique handle on how we do this program, but they're not. And I come around here, and first thing that happens is I start going to meetings, I stop using, and you know, it's kind of like I start getting high off of not being high. It's almost like not using nothing's a new drug. And then after a while, I'm going to these meetings and I'm listening to what people are reading and all this stuff. And, you know, I kind of memorize that stuff. Couldn't read very well. And I know people have come around to NA without being able to read at all. We learn to read by listening to the readings in the meeting. Again and again and again and again. And hearing them and seeing them at the same time. If you have a problem with reading, get yourself a little white book. And as the readings are being read, follow along in it. And that could teach you how to read. That's taught many, many people how to read. You don't have to talk to anybody about having a reading problem. A lot of us have reading problems. But read along. Learn the words. And in 90 days, I had all the answers. I had them all. I had this shit down. You know, I'll tell you, ask me any question. Ask me a question. Just go ahead. I'll tell you. And I'd spout this stuff about the therapeutic value of one addict helping the other is without parallel. I didn't have any idea what I was talking about. Or I'd say something like, there's one thing more than anything else that will feed us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Do you think in 90 days I had any idea what that meant? It sounded good, you know, and it made me feel like part of, and people would accept me, and they'd pat me on the back saying, oh, you're doing good. But the reality is I didn't have a clue. I just memorized the words. And I thought I had all the answers. You know, the funny part about it is I did have all the answers. I just didn't know which were which and which went with which questions. You know, or what they meant, or how I could use them in my daily living. That's the biggie. Our 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts. and practice these principles in all our affairs. And I'm begging to practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, once you find out about how this program works, start using it in your life, in every area of your life. You know, don't withhold anything. Don't reserve anything. You know, reservations are kind of the things I've told God, hey God, I'll handle this one. You just leave me alone. I can take care of it. I can handle it. And I'm in trouble. Because I can no more handle my life than a man in the moon. You know, if I could handle my life, I sure wouldn't end up sitting up here in front of you guys with cancer. I'd be bouncing around the room, you know, finger popping and talking long shit. But I'm here tonight because I'm an NA member. I'm here tonight because this is part of how I live. This is as much about part of the way I live as turning my will and my life over to the care of God, or writing an inventory, or making amends, or any of the other things the program teaches me to work. Over the years, my program's changed. You know, I got to that point where I was talking about knowing all the answers. And that only lasted about a month before the roof caved in. You know, the big blue bird of feelings flew over and took a healthy dump, and I figured out, oh, this is why I use it. And I had nothing, I had no way to cope with those feelings. I had no way to cope. And what did I do? I turned to the program. And I can remember it 6 months going, oh my God, it's not the drug. Because I thought drugs were the problem. And I really thought the drugs were the problem. And had you asked me, I would have told you that I'm powerless over heroin and it has fucked up my life. And that's what the first step said. But it's not what the first step said. The first step says the powerless of our addiction. That our lives have become unmanageable. And again, addiction is a threefold disease. It's physical, and that has to do with the drugs that we use, but it's also mental and spiritual. And my experience is the mental part and the spiritual part are much more devastating and much more far-reaching than the physical part of our disease. You know, once we clean up and kick a habit, the physical is pretty much taking care of itself. The mental and the spiritual aspects of our disease continue throughout our recovery. The potential for the physical continues throughout for our recovery. But in reality, the mental and spiritual aspects are things that you'll have to deal with all your life. And again, the tendency we have to get strung out on anything, take wonderful things and make them self-destructive. And number two, lack of faith, lack of hope, lack of trust, inability to relate to others is equal self-obsession, low self-esteem. Those things are things that we have to cope with on through time, and things I have to struggle with today. The most difficult thing in my life today is the third step. The most difficult thing in my life today is the third step, to really make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. As I continued and approached a year, I got into what they call the birthday crazies, where just before a year where you're into sabotage, you know. Oh my God, if I stay clean another 3 weeks, then I'll have a year and I'll have made it. What do I do now? How can I wreck this? Or just after your year when you're going, Boy, I'm glad I made that. Now I can get back to living like a real person. The reality is I've been living like a real person. You know, or the stuff that happens at 18 months when we find ourselves bored with the program, and it says it in the white book, that we get tired of repeating our new practices, like it said. But sometimes in those times are when the greatest change is taking place within. I get tired of this. I've discovered that there are other things to do other than go to meetings. I mean, I found Star Trek on the TV. I found books. I found hobbies. I found things I enjoyed doing. I found things that were fun. Certainly a whole lot more fun than listening to you guys. You know, we come in here and, you know, the meetings don't change too much from day to day, year to year. I mean, every once in a while there's some spectacular that happens. But basically, year in, year out, people say pretty much the same things. Newcomers ask the same questions. People's responses to those questions are pretty much the same. You know, and it's not a thrilling existence. The thrilling part comes in watching someone's eyes. The thrilling part comes when you're talking to somebody after a meeting and you can see a change take place. You can see someone begin to live where once they were dying. That's the thrilling part. The thrilling parts of the convention. When you finally, something clicks, and you're going, oh, wow, now I understand that. Or over at someone's house, becoming a part of someone's life. Those are the thrills of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, NA to me is not about an hour and a half in the evening. An hour and a half in the evening are fine. But NA is so much more than that. It's a way of living. You either live this way or you don't live this way. It's okay if you don't. It's okay if you don't. I've had to give people permission to reject this way of life. Because, the reality is some do. And it hurts when you care a lot about it. We're not in recovery in isolation. We affect each other's lives. And when someone you've cared about and you've spent time with and you've invested your spirit with goes out, it hurts. I can remember sitting going, God, please don't ever let me love another addict because it hurts too bad when we lose. And you know what? That wasn't the answer either. That was too much like the death I had using, not being able to care about anybody. At 3 years, I found myself in a situation where it seemed like all the things that I'd used to try to fix myself quit working. Substitution quit working. And I was in trouble, and I had to dive into the program on a new level. At 4.5 years, it seemed like the program stopped working. The things you taught me about NA, the gimmicks, to write the inventory, to call your sponsors, to work with your newcomer, all those things seemed to quit working. And I had to get right with my higher power. I had to come out with a new relationship with God. I had to turn my recovery over to the care of God as I understand it. I couldn't just turn symptoms over. I had to turn the real deal over. I had to work a third step for the first time. For real. My understanding of the steps has changed over time. You know, like I told you about the first step, I originally thought that was meant that, you know, I admit that I'm powerless over heroin and that it screwed up my life. That was obvious. But I've come to believe in this threefold disease. Perhaps the most change has come in the second step, particularly in the last 2 years. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I thought originally that meant that I come to believe that God can fix me. You know, maybe God can fix me, but I don't think that's what the step says. I had to look at this idea of sanity, and what does that really mean? And I went back to the simple stuff. A person who is sane is a person who is in touch with reality. A person who is insane is someone who is out of touch with reality. And what's reality? Ultimately, reality is God. The universe. All things. So my second step changed to where I come to believe that a process, these 12 steps, can put me back in touch with reality, can restore my spirituality, can restore my relationship with God. And that's really changed all the rest of the steps. I used to think the third step was about making a commitment and saying the words. They had a third step prayer that I used to repeat. It was really good prayer. Today, my third step is about trying to live life. As if I really believed there was a loving God taking care of me. I mean, what if there really was? What if there really is someone taking care of you? And it's okay to risk living. What if there really is a loving God out there working for you and you don't have to try to control all this shit? And you don't have to try to make it the unmanageable turn out the way you want it. What if? It'd be a different world, wouldn't it? I know it's been a different world for me when I could believe that. The fourth step, instead of being show and tell, you know, has been a matter of really taking a look at who I am and seeing the ways that I've separated myself from God. Seeing those things that I've done throughout my recovery that keep me from growing spiritually. The patterns I've fallen into, the mistakes I've made, and even some of the successes which have kept me from surrendering. You see, because you give me, you know, a quarter inch of success, I'll ride it for a mile and a half. You know, you get, I try one thing, and it turns out okay, I'm going to try it 100 times. Just to try to make it come out okay again. Except I forget that the first time it came out okay wasn't because of my doing, it was God's doing. I forget that. So my fourth step has become an exploration of me and how I relate to God. It's become a lot about humility. You know, they talk about humility in the later steps, but there's a lot of humility in the fourth step, knowing who and what you really are. Only by knowing my patterns can I avoid them. The fifth step to me has become a time when I can gain some clarity about that. Get someone sitting down with me who doesn't have a big vested interest in who I am. You see, I'm incapable of being objective about myself. Everything I think about me is tied up with my hopes, my prayers, my fears, my shit, my issues, my past, my present, my dreams. And, you know, I'll tweak anything. Lois brought home a thing one time from a meeting saying, we're the type of people who from a single tree can create a mighty force in which we immediately get lost. That's the kind of stuff I need a sponsor for. Who can say, hey, dummy, this is just a tree. Now, this ain't the world. Who is not prejudiced about Greg, who can see me objectively and say, hey, this pattern here, don't you see this? And I go, no. That's what my fifth step has turned into. Getting some perspective on what I learned in the fourth step. Getting some unprejudiced outside opinion about what's going on, what's really going on in my life. Sixth step. Became entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. To me, it's about getting ready. It's about learning about those defects and taking the stuff I learned in the fourth and fifth step and really taking a look at it. Why is this a defect? What does this mean? Why is it, you know, what is it all about? And it's about learning more about humility. And it's also about preparing to do a seventh step. One of the things that has been become very favorite of mine in a sixth step is that when I'm working with someone, is ask the person I'm working with to write their own personal, individual, unique seventh step prayer. And something that means what they really want it to mean. And in the seventh step, going and following through and praying that prayer and taking a look at the effect of it on their lives. Writing a journal. I'm a big believer in writing, although I don't think writing is the only way. Writing a journal about how this step is working in your life. How this prayer, the seventh step prayer that you've begun to use daily is working in your life. The amends have changed dramatically for me. But before I talk about those, you know, our defects and shortcomings, I used to think of those things as like symptoms and things like that, but I think, you know, back to that, what I found in the fourth step, those have to do more with the things that separate me from God. My defects and shortcomings are those things that separate me from God, which separate me from sanity, which keep me sick. And the eighth and the ninth step are the primary way, other than humbly asking God to remove those things, that I can contribute to change. I make a list of how I have separated myself from God. All the things I've used to stay off track, because I was afraid maybe. All the things I've used that have kept me from growing spiritually. And I take a look at it. And I plan how I can amend that. What can I do about this? You know, the ninth step says we may direct amends whenever possible, except when I do so with an injury to them or others. There are a couple of things up off the top that I, for me, have learned about that step. Number one is I'm not others. I'm not one of these members that says, well, you don't do nothing that could place you in jeopardy as part of your ninth step. That's not what the ninth step is about to me. It's not about placing anybody in jeopardy. It's about trying to mend and restore where I've gone off track spiritually. And the second thing I've learned about the ninth step, I feel real strongly about, is you make amends. If it's possible, you make direct amends. If it's not possible, you still make amends. You just can't do it directly. I myself have used this idea, well, I haven't had the opportunity to make direct amends. I must not need to do anything about this year or next to avoid some of the things I had to do. No, I think we make amends. And to me, the process of making amends is to take positive action to put myself back in spiritual balance. Taking positive action to restore my spirituality in a particular area. Taking positive action to try to see how I've gotten off track and bring myself back on track. The 10th step is a really neat step. And it has, that 10th step has to do with, for me, has to do with balance in our lives. Staying on track. Here in the 8th and 9th step, we've kind of, 7, 8, and 9, we've kind of gotten back on track some. Through our amends, through humbly asking God to remove our shortcomings. And we've gotten kind of back on track. And one of the ways we stay on track is through the 10th step, and that's by keeping track of how we're doing on those things. And I've learned that for me, you know, checking out the day at the end of the day don't cut it. That I have to do almost a constant monitoring to see how I'm doing throughout the day. And make adjustments. You know, and when I head off, and the 10th step says, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, and for years I thought that meant, well, and when I do something wrong to somebody, I apologize to them. I read it in my head, and when we were wrong, promptly apologized for it. You know, today, that's so much broader. When I start heading the wrong direction, I need to come back on track. I have to admit that I'm heading the wrong direction and bring my do what I can do to come back on track. When I fall into one of my patterns, self-destructive patterns, whether I involve someone else or not, I have to recognize that I'm headed the wrong direction and take action to come back on track to maintain that spiritual balance. So for me today, the 10th step is about maintaining spiritual balance. 11th step, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood it. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. To me, that has to do about growing spiritually. It has to do about keeping myself off on track in the future. It's about discovering what God has in store for me. Being open to God's plan, not just my plan. And having the courage and the power to follow that plan, not my plan. Follow up and work the program. Work God's program. Yeah, prayer and meditation are two of the important ways to do that. And I've come to believe that life is all about prayer and meditation. What if everything you do is a prayer? What if every sleazy thing we did was a prayer? What if every generous thing we did was a prayer? What if every negative thing we do is a prayer? What if every positive thing we do is a prayer? That scared the shit out of me at one time. Because I started looking at my life and I wasn't real thrilled about some of the stuff I was doing. And my prayer was not a very positive prayer. So I believe the 11th step is about making our lives a prayer. Is your life a prayer? That you're proud to give to God? Or is your life something you're embarrassed about? Or feel guilty of? I suspect that if you're embarrassed about your life, or feel guilty about the way you act, you need to do some changing. And that's part of the 11th step. We need to change the way we live and make our lives that positive prayer. And if everything I do is prayer, then maybe everything I think is meditation. And I honestly believe that if I can come into a room looking for the presence of a loving God, aware that God will be speaking through whoever's speaking, I'll hear God's word from me. I'll hear what I need to hear. Why have you guys experienced that? Gone to a meeting in a blue trunk, and some newcomer has said something so outrageous that it just blows you away. And they have no idea what they're talking about, and it's so profound. It really is. They in that one moment of time become a vehicle of God and are able to say something in a way that you've never been able to hear it before. And the light goes on inside you, that you have a spiritual awakening. You can experience that around here, out of the mouths of babes. 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And to me, the bottom line of that is live this way. If you want to be an NA member, be a fucking NA member. Do it right. If you want to follow a spiritual path, commit yourself with abandon. It's the only way it works. This is not a half-assed program. Having had a spiritual awakening, a rebirth, an enlightenment, and I believe Narcotics Anonymous, this 12-step path we're on, is just as sure a road to enlightenment as any philosophy or religion, and does not exclude any philosophy or religion. But having had that awakening, You know, it's kind of like when someone turns on your lights, let it shine, baby. Don't cover it up. When you get enlightened, when you have that spiritual awakening, don't hide it. Let it shine forth. And share it with others. So it can grow. So it can be nurtured. So it can shine even brighter. Carry this message to others. And what's the message? The message is hope. The message is spirituality. The message is all these things. And practice these principles in all our affairs. That's a big part of the message. Live this way. You know, I can say all kinds of stuff about the steps. I've learned a lot about the steps and traditions and Narcotics Anonymous in 28 years. But the message that I show you through the way I live is the real one. Kind of like, don't tell me how good you're doing, show me by the way you live. How am I living? How's my life today? How's my program today? I'm coping with very serious illness. Some days I do pretty good with it. Some days I don't do very well with it. Yesterday I sat, told Lois, I'm so tired of being sick. I was struggling with being sick. Some days my relationship with my higher power is strong. I have not fallen into the trap of why me, God, thank God. I'm pretty much convinced that this is an opportunity rather than a punishment or a curse. Now, God has got wonderful stuff in store for me. And I'm experienced part of that. Last weekend, there were three guys over to the house, all from different parts of the country. And they had an experience. They had a number of experiences, which may have changed their lives. NA members, one from the Midwest, one from New Jersey, one from Indiana. We didn't know each other, but we're brought together for a common purpose. And they worked together, and they laughed together, and they told stories together, and they shared together. And the barriers came down, and they sat out in the woods, and they experienced something. My dream for a lot of years is to have a place where that could happen, and it's happening. In spite of me. Don't know what the future holds for me. I don't know whether, like anybody else, I don't know whether I'm going to buy the farm tonight on the way home. Have 6 months, 2 years, 10 years, 15 years, I don't know. What I do know is that I have had a good life beyond my wildest dreams in Narcotics Anonymous. I have been given the great gift of having had a chance to touch some spirits, get to know people just like you, and contribute to their recovery and have them contribute to my recovery. And that's what this is about. It's about touching spirits. It's about giving you a little bit of my glow in exchange for a little bit of your glow. And both coming out brighter in the process. It's about being there for each other when no one's ever been there before. It's about learning how to love when we never knew how to love. It's about learning to give instead of take. It's about all those things. And it's a hell of a trip. I have a good life. I have had a good life. I continue to have a good life. And I ain't done yet. So thank you for asking me down. I love you.